This is Pet Life Radio. Let's talk pets.
And we're here live, not from my regular venue, here from Memphis, Tennessee, here at a friend's wedding for this weekend. Here right in the heart, last night went to Beale Street, very famous street, and having a blast, actually. So here live from Memphis, here for your pets. Anything you need to know, now is the time to ask. Free advice, nothing better than free. And how to get a hold of me, very easy. Well, here on Instagram, you're here already, so just type away. Here on Pet Life Radio, you can either use the good old-fashioned telephone, toll-free 877-385-8882. Once again, 877-385-8882. Or better yet, join us here live. Click on shows and click on Ask the Vet with Dr. Jeff. And you can join us right here live with your pets, which is kind of like telemedicine at its finest. And that's exactly what we're recommending. As a matter of fact, and I know there's going to be a lot of controversy going on in the field, but California, starting in January, is easing up. It's what we call VCPR, veterinary client patient relationship, which means that anyone on AirVet or any telemedicine platform who is going to do a virtual visit will be able to prescribe certain things. Obviously, nothing controlled, no narcotics. But I mean, if it's an eye medicine or an antibiotic or a cough suppressant, things that will help will be able to do that. And again, I just read something this morning, which kind of bugged me, is that the American Vet Med Association is still against banning a VCPR, veterinary client patient relationship. And I just don't get it. I mean, in human medicine, that the VCPR can be established online on the virtual visit. Where in veterinary medicine, they're still requiring a full hands-on exam, which I mean, for certain things, absolutely. But is it necessary always? I don't think so. And I think it would be a lot more beneficial to you as pet parents and to your pets, of course, if under certain circumstances, we'll be able to actually help them by prescribing an antibiotic or some sort of non-steroidal anti-inflammatory pain medicine, something that's not going to hurt. And, we're talking virtual visits. We'll be able to see the pet. And also, we'll be able to have a conversation. It's not on a chat. We're there with you. So if there's any question, or if the animal should get, doesn't do as well, or the problems seem to explode even after starting the medication, then obviously we can stop. And of course, we will say you really need to see your vet. But to get things moving, I think it's a smart thing to do. So it says we have a request to join live. A lot of times people are doing that and accidentally. I'll accept it, see what happens, if it works. If not, hold on. I'm accepting. Jessica, so if you're there and you have a question, ask away. A lot of times people hit that accidentally and they don't mean to say, yes, I want to be on your video live. So anyway, so far hasn't joined. So it's canceled. It's okay. All right. So let me have some good questions. Any questions out there? New York Yankee, how young in the way can you neuter or spay a pet? Is it the same for all kinds of pets? So great question. And unfortunately, it's not an easy answer because a lot has changed recently. And so typically our plan was to spay neuter around 6 months of age. Why 6 months and not before? Which I was always been against doing it before, like the early spay neuter programs. It's because many dogs, especially the smaller breeds, end up with something called retained deciduous teeth. Those are puppy teeth that didn't fall off on schedule and therefore need to be pulled. Well, if you spayed the dog at 4 months or neutered the dog at 4 months, and then you find out that there are some retained deciduous teeth, now that's going to require another anesthesia. And to anesthetize a young dog twice in a few months, that's insane. So I always wait until all the adult teeth are in. So we would say 6 months. The goal then was try to spay them, the females, prior to their first heat, because the best prevention of cancer, mammary cancer, was if you spay them before the first heat. But over the last several years, other information has become available that maybe spaying without having any heat might be detrimental in other areas. So now the theory has changed. Now we want them to have one heat. And then more recent study came out with larger breeds that the incidence of bone cancer in adult senior dogs, all right, or older dogs, is 65% greater in the male and 35% greater in the female that were respectively spayed or neutered pre-pubertally when they were young. So now that changes the picture completely. So when it comes to larger breeds, on the males, I want to wait till they're a year, a year and a half, even 2 years in a giant breed before neutering. In the females, there are disadvantages to letting him have that second heat. So now we are letting him have the first heat, waiting a couple of months after the first heat, and then spaying them after that, but before the second heat, which, depending on what book the dog is read, they're supposed to have their first heat at 7 months, second at 14 months. It's every 7 months or after. But we're also realizing that's not the case. There are some dogs that don't have the first heat till 11 or 12 months, in which case we want to wait until after that. But ideally, you want to get them before their second heat. Now, how about cats? Cats, we don't really have the same issue with bone cancer. We don't have the same issue with urinary issues that might incur from early spay or neuter, or in this case, an early spay. So can they be spayed 6 months right after all their adult teeth come in? Yeah, I would still do that. Preferably, I like to wait a little bit. And again, when it comes to the urinary problems, you know, hopefully indoor cats, they're litter box trained anyway. You may notice it if there's some issues, but we don't tend to see them as much in the cats. So that's the long answer. Short answer is there are differences. I would wait females until their first heat. And I always like to wait a couple of months after the first heat because the next one's not coming for 7 months. And you have a lot of swelling. You're eliminating some of the complications of surgery if you wait till all the swelling is down, wait a couple of months after that first heat. Males, anytime, but minimum for me, even a small breed, 9 months, 10 months. Large breeds, a year to a year and a half, you know, like really big breeds, giants, even 2 years, I won't argue. So, New York Yankee, I hope that answers your question. So, my Yorkie just had some blood work and his cholesterol and glucose were slightly elevated. And the x-ray showed his liver may be slightly enlarged. Waiting for more results tomorrow. First of all, how old is this Yorkie? Secondly, cholesterol, it's a little bit overrated. I mean, if it's super high, 600, then yeah, maybe we got a problem. 325 and higher up to maybe 400. In order for a dog to have problems with atherosclerosis, right? They'd have to live to about 30 or 40. So when we have a slight elevated cholesterol or triglycerides. Now also, it's very important to know when the blood was drawn. Because if you have a dog that had breakfast and then goes in for the blood work and the triglycerides or cholesterol are high, it easily could be just postprandial. So you got to keep that. Now, the liver being slightly enlarged, again, you know, it's better when it comes to evaluating this, it's better to use ultrasound. Because with ultrasound, you can actually see the texture of the liver. You can see if there are any, what we call mixed echogenicity, where the substrate of the liver, the substance itself, is not uniform, but areas are thickened, or if we see growths, you can't pick that up on an x-ray, unless it's gross changes. So I think an ultrasound would be in order, but if the liver values are okay, then I wouldn't worry. Glucose slightly elevated, again, postprandial, it could be, we know dogs that, for example, have insulin problem, independent diabetes, okay, like type 1 diabetes, then that glucose is going to be 300 or 500. So if it's, you know, it's a little bit over 100, I'm not too worried about it unless it's persistent. At least follow it. Maybe in a couple of months, take another blood test on an empty stomach and do the follow-up on an empty stomach and see if those values have changed. But if everything else is okay and the dog is happy, alert, active, playful, eating, then I'm not so worried. Leg shaking happened because. So why do we see this leg shaking? Again, usually we call it muscular fatigue, okay? And so if it's muscle fatigue, one thing could be that. Also, there's a disease called Addison's disease. Addison's disease is a hyposecretion, a low secretion of the adrenals, kind of like the opposite of Cushing's disease, which is oversecretion. So with Addison's disease, sometimes we will see the legs shivering and shaking episodes, things like that. If it's one leg only, it could be a weakness for some reason. It could be pain. So you have to search, depends on how old the dog is. Does it happen all the time? Is it after just exercise? In which case, I just think muscle fatigue. What are the circumstances of this leg shaking? How often does it happen? Is it only one leg? So there's more to be determined to then help you find out what the underlying cause may be. And if it's even something to worry about, which it probably isn't. Okay. My Maltese Shih Tzu mix throws up water after drinking. Is that something to worry about? So it depends how fast the dog is drinking the water. Sometimes they will drink water rather quickly, and we will see they'll spit it up. There's also a difference between regurgitation and vomiting. So if the dog just drinks a ton of water and then opens the mouth and it all comes up again, that's different than a dog who is actually vomiting, where the water got through into the stomach. Because with vomiting, they usually have this that heaving first. And so that if that's not going on, that's not happening, then there's a good chance that it's regurgitation. And with regurg, it could be just how fast the dog is drinking, maybe too fast. Did it just eat? or there might be still something stuck in the esophagus that hasn't made it into the stomach yet. So these are all things that are possible that would cause that. What I would start doing is limit the amount of water that the dog could ingest at one point. Some way to do that is get a bowl. It sort of has different partitions. It slows down how fast they can eat or drink. In this case, it would be drinking. It's like they call it gulp-free or non-gulp bowls. Then also, you can, instead of filling a bowl with water, fill it with a couple of ice cubes. Then as the ice melts, the dog can go up and drink water, but it limits how much and how fast they can drink. It's melted ice cubes on the process of melting. So the water's at the bottom, but the ice cubes are still there. And that, again, that's, in a way, it's a no gulp. It stops them from drinking too fast. So again, try that stuff, and then we can talk from there. Now, since you consider a normal average liver number, well, there are a number of liver enzymes that we look at. There's the AST, which is something is not as significant. You have alkaline phosphatase, which has a high of about 101, or it depends on the lab. And you have the ALT, the alanine transferase, which is the most significant liver enzyme. That's the one we really look at. You don't want it to be, you know, much more than 110, 120, again, depending on the lab. I think some labs high normal is 131, but it all depends on the lab. But regardless, you don't want it to be 300 or 400. If it is that high, you usually have a sick dog to go with it. So if the dog is showing no signs of illness, then it's most likely not anything that's that serious. But if the ALT, which is the one out, alkaline phosphatase, a little different, and that is elevated for a number of reasons. Number one, we talked about Cushing's disease earlier. When animals are subjected to some drugs, notably prednisolone, any of the cortisones, or phenobarbital, a dog, for example, that are on phenobarb for seizure medication, then their alkphos will be very high. Now, therefore, when a dog has Cushing's disease, where you're not giving them steroids, the body is giving itself steroids, what the first thing we notice is a dog that is drinking and peeing a lot, same side effect of getting too much cortisone, and a very high alkaline phosphatase. So when we see that, then we say, okay, we need to check for Cushing's disease. Unless, of course, the dog has been or is getting too much steroids or steroids on a regular basis. So that's one of the things we really watch out for. Then there's also something in some older dogs where the alkaline phosphatase could be off the charts high. I'm talking over 1,000 or even 2,000. And yet the Cushing's tests are normal and the dog is acting totally normal. The dog is maybe drinking a little bit more water than normally, but not excessive. And then that could be something called vacuolar hepatopathy. We see it in older dogs. It is basically asymptomatic. It doesn't cause many problems. There's really no way to treat it. And the dogs aren't sick, so there's really nothing you have to treat. Vacuolar hepatopathy. So again, when we have a high alkphos, it could be either one of those. It's either a disease, something's wrong, or it could be a secondary complication by having too much cortisone or phenobarbital or other drugs that can do that as well. The one we pay most attention to is that ALT. There's another one called GGT, which we, again, it would have to be very high to be a problem. I see many dogs with it like 12 or 15, and I think high normal is could be 6 or 7, and they're fine. They're totally fine. So again, if you have elevated enzymes, liver enzymes, of course, your veterinarian should, have a discussion with your vet about, what are the problems, what are the issues. But what's also very important is, are these elevations associated with a sick dog? If the dog is not sick and the x-rays or ultrasound are normal, then there's uniform echogenicity. The liver just tends to be a little big. I would just say, let's follow it and see what happens. I wouldn't recommend liver biopsies yet. They're not without complication and risk. So that's my take. So I would, for now, if everything else is normal, I would just follow those numbers and see if they change. Okay. Leg shaking, a mixed breed fluffy white rescue dog. Okay. Could be fear, anxiety. There's also something called white dog shaker syndrome. We see it a lot in Maltese, and it's a shaker syndrome. It happens in small white dogs. So that also could be something going on. And there's really not a whole lot to check for. They can do some muscle biopsy. It's more of a neurologic condition. It doesn't seem to cause any disease. So that could be what's going on. I'm not too worried about it. But again, follow that and talk to a veterinarian about, the white dog shaker syndrome and see that might be the problem. 30-pound corgi that bit off a small part of a plastic fork, not a half an inch, not extracted it, and it's been a week. My hunch is, well, first of all, Unfortunately, a plastic fork probably won't show up on x-ray, but it might. I think if it's been a week, it probably did come out. Maybe he chewed a little bit with smaller pieces, and it could have been in the middle of a big clump of feces. So I'm not worried about it, because either one of two things are going to happen. If it was going to cause a problem, it would have caused a problem already. And if you haven't even noticed it, it probably did come out. I can't imagine it being stuck somewhere, but it would be worth taking an x-ray just to see if maybe there is something going on, maybe not. But again, I'm not too worried about it unless there's a clinical disease associated with it. So anyway, before we get to the next question, we have to break for our commercial break here on Pet Life Radio. So Mark, take it away. We'll be back after these short messages. And don't go away. And love your questions here on Pet Life Radio as well. So don't be shy. Be right back.
Take a bite out of your competition. Advertise your business with an ad in Pet Life Radio podcasts and radio shows. There is no other pet-related media that is as large and reaches more pet parents and pet lovers than Pet Life Radio. With over 7 million monthly listeners, Pet Life Radio podcasts are available on all major podcast platforms. And our live radio stream goes out to over 250 million subscribers on iHeartRadio, Odyssey, TuneIn, and other streaming apps. For more information on how you can advertise on the number one pet podcast and radio network, visit PetLifeRadio.com/advertise today.
Let's talk pets.
Let's talk pets.
On Pet Life Radio.
Pet Life Radio.
PetLifeRadio.com.
All right, and we are back live here. So there was a question I wanted to get to. So I adopted a Frenchie 2 weeks ago. The Frenchie got in a fight. The other dog hurt his eyes so much that the vet had no choice but to remove the eyes, both of them. Ay, ay, ay. The previous owner then abandoned him. So it's really sad. Interestingly, the dog will adapt. What I find most interesting is that the nasal olfactory pathways, neurologic pathways from their sense of smell, which we know is unbelievable, they merge, they link in to the visual pathways, which is why, which is so fascinating to me, that if you would walk into a room and you pick up a smell, a scent, you will smell it, but you can't exactly detect where it's coming from. But a dog, on the other hand, they usually can. And that's why a dog can pick up a scent without seeing it, food, a morsel of food on the floor, and go right to it as if they could see it. Because the olfactory, the smell pathway, merges with the visual pathway, and it directs them straight to it as if they could see it. So will this dog ultimately do okay? Yes. You have to be very careful at the beginning. Terribly sad story. But there are many dogs out there that for one reason or another, maybe not as such a young dog, they lose their sight, and they do just fine. Which is interesting why, when a dog, because of age, loses like a sight because of a cataract, and the dog's already 13 or 14, and someone's considering the cataract surgery, which, by the way, is extremely expensive and no guarantee. Why? The dog's 14 and he's obviously getting around fine. You know, he's been living with these cataracts for a year. So let him be. He's doing okay. So anyway, don't fret. I think that the puppy will do fine. And then let's see. My Jack was there. I said the dog doesn't need the medication on the liver. After the cancer was removed, recent blood test said the number went down. You see, 3,300 to 1,800, and it still might go down even more. So that's good news. That's really good news. Hold on. Good time. I'm going to please help as much as I can for the hardships of the winter. All right, here we go. What causes my dog's skin to change color? One side is black. Is this a yeast issue? So it's called hyperpigmentation, and that could be for a number of reasons. Usually it's a chronic skin disease can cause hyperpigmentation. And here's one of the ways that I often recommend to determine whether or not this is something that can be concerned of, like maybe a bad yeast infection or any infection, or not. And that is when you're petting the dog over the area that has changed color, don't look. Do you feel anything? Do you feel greasy? Does it feel lumpy? Are there scabs or sores? Are there scratches? If you don't feel anything, but the skin is just as smooth as the skin on the other side or the skin someplace else on the body, then most likely it is just a pigmentation. And it could have been from an old problem, an old infection, or oftentimes with dogs with yeast infection, we might see that. So I don't necessarily recommend worrying about it unless the dog is scratching at it, unless, in which case you'll feel bumps. It could be, as I said, it could be yeast. It could be a bacterial infection, but typically, and also with age, it happens. And also, interestingly, many white dogs, like let's go back to the Little Bichons and the Maltese, right? They will get, if you part their hair, you pull their white, nice, clean hair away, you'll see black blotches of pigment. That's normal. So I wouldn't worry too much about it. Unless, of course, as I said, there are other signs associated with it. If it's on her stomach, as I said, I see this a lot. And it's usually an area where they may have had a problem in the past, but right now they're doing okay, as assuming there's no current problem. As I said, the thickness, a different feel, a texture, scabs, scratching, redness, etc. Can I help as much as you can for the hearts of the winter may hear? Weather is very cold, especially outside the city. Okay. So when it comes to getting the hardships of cold weather, and yes, we are starting seeing in many parts of the country, it's already cold. There are certain ski areas, I understand, that are already getting snow. So it's almost like the opposite, where it's super hot. You have to make sure they have freedom, their protection from the wind, so they don't get that wind chill factor. So there has to be some sort of shelter if you're going to keep them outside. If it's really cold and water freezes, you know, I have to look for some sort of water bowl that doesn't allow the water to freeze. That's important. If you can, of course, keep them indoors. And it's just they may drink need more water than normally. It's very similar to when it's too hot. Any weather extreme is a problem. And one thing people say, well, God, my dog is a husky, or it's a Malamute, and they're a Spitz or a Samoyed, and they're bred to be in the cold. Yes, but these dogs are working in the cold. They are running. When they don't have room to run and remain active to keep their body temperature up, then they too can suffer from frostbite and frigid conditions. So don't kid yourself. You have to keep them protected from the wind, protected from the cold. There are now so cool ways, if you have a dog igloo or a house, but doggy heaters, there are so many ways to keep the temperature warmer for them if they have to remain outside. So please take good care and just watch them very carefully. So the other numbers she said are concerned with are down also. You want half a medication, bring the 18 down more. I would say, again, not seeing the dog, not seeing all the factors, not knowing if there was a biopsy done, I would agree with you. And especially there are some medications that are really not medications for liver. Denamarin, for example, which is milk thistle or derivative, S-adenosyl. So there are things that you can give that are just liver supplements, not drugs. And I would definitely continue those because there's no downside whatsoever. I would say to go back. Now you're saying medicine, let me know. You can text me, you know, privately. Let me know, what are we talking about? Truly a medicine? Or are we just talking about the liver supplements, liver diet, liver supplements? Those are easy to continue and there's no downside. So I would highly recommend that as well. What are results of a dog is fixed at 10 weeks? Well, again, the condition, the fixing, I assume it's a fix if you mean a male, really no change. If it was a large breed, I would worry later on down the road. But as far as females, again, there may be some issues with urinary incontinence down the road. Certainly, it would help with the limiting or eradication of a mammary cancer. But also, I'd worry about having to knock them out again if they're small breeds and take out baby teeth once they hit 6 months of age. So that's the only thing that why many of us have stopped doing these early spay neuters. I understand rescues though, kind of rescues have to do it because there's no guarantee that the owner who takes a dog that young is going to do it themselves. And I'm back in the day when you got vouchers, free spay neuter, right? You've already paid for it when you rescue the animal or adopt it from the shelter. And guess what? I think the statistics are over half of them never come back for the free surgery. So now they said, guys, no, we have to do it before they leave. And I get it. And that's a responsible thing to do. Just know, you know, there may be some downsides. All right. What is the best food recommended for a puppy Rottweiler and how often to feed? So first of all, in my opinion, there's no best food. The best food is a food that the dog will eat, likes, gives them lots of energy, good stools, nice shiny coat. That, and there are many that will do that. Now, as far as how often to feed, usually any dog under 12 weeks, I like to see 3 times a day. And then as they get older, past 12 weeks, you could take that same volume and now divide it into 2 meals instead of 3 meals. So the daily volume stays the same, but you're dividing into 2 meals instead of 3. And again, remember, a dog like a Rottweiler, that dog grows very quickly. So you need to continually, you know, increase the ration until you get to a point, maybe 10, 11, 12 months of age, where things will start evening out, flattening out, because the demand, the rapid growth is over. So now the demand for nutrition is going to be less. So that dog at the same weight might be eating less than it did at another puppy who's that weight, but is 18 to 20 to 30 weeks of age. So just keep that in mind. But there are a lot of good foods out there. Mama Sue, so if the skin is greasy, then yes, then you could be fungal infection. Your doctor could do a cytology and see, are there any yeast? It could be anti-bathe with an antibacterial, antifungal shampoo, something with chlorhexidine and ketoconazole. You can also get chlorhexidine and ketoconazole sprays. And then, and even if necessary, like a medication like oral fluconazole or itraconazole, there are things that can be given to help with yeast infection if that's what it is. A pug, we adopted her, so we don't know her history or age. I mean, it could, again, I would treat it accordingly. As I said, easy treatment. You know, you don't necessarily need medication right away. I'd start with the sprays and the shampoos. And she smells. Oh, she smells? Then yes, it's probably a yeast infection that has that greasy, we call that Seborrhea oleosa. And that is often secondary to a yeast infection. All right. And we're getting down to the bottom. My show has to end. So a good tech vet school. Depends where you live. There are, there's a school, Pierce College in the San Fernando Valley, has a great tech school. There are a number of them. If you just go online, you would see there's some good ones out there. All right. So I think that does it. Sam Frenchie with a lost eye seems to have a hip problem. What medication do you recommend? Well, it all depends on what the problem is. And supplementation is where I like to start. Things like glucosamine, chondroitin, you can try acupuncture could help. Laser therapy could help. And then if it gets worse, you need to see a veterinarian. And then there are medications that are non-steroidal anti-inflammatories that could help as well. This is also called PRP, platelet-rich plasma, injected into the hip joints. So there are many, many modalities that can help. And I'm sure there are some more naturopathic things as well. So do some homework. But at the very least, think about acupuncture or laser, and then glucosamine, chondroitin supplements that can help well. Well, yeah, you can always come to California. but thank you very much. All right. So we've run over a story of my life. We will see you here next week, same bat time. Oh, no, next week, Mark is not going to be here on, he'll be 2 weeks, right? All right, so here on Pet Life Radio, it'll be 2 weeks before I see you again. Here on Instagram, I will see you next week. And again, save your questions. Any good questions, love to talk about it. I didn't get to any of my notes, things I have a whole list of notes here, things maybe we'll get to them next week. You know, just cool things that are happening, good subjects, things that I know you'll find interesting, but this is even better. Helping you with your pets makes me very happy. All right, see you next week, everybody. And Pet Life Radio, we'll see you in two. Bye-bye.
Let's Talk Pets, every week on demand, only on PetLifeRadio.com.